Listen and stream the all-new talk radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
At this time, we get into some of these very interesting discussions that we usually do. We've been speaking about financial literacy for a couple weeks on a Wednesday on the program. And today is going to be no different. We welcome to our program a gentleman who has a very, very successful career in finance. He's at this point in time head of retail and commercial banking at Answer Bank. I hope I pronounced this correctly. Let's welcome Edmund Joshem to our program. Hello, good morning to you and welcome to our show.
Good morning, Satish. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Nice to have you. It's nice to have you with us here this morning. Financial literacy, it's something that we've been trying over the few weeks to try and pass on the information so that persons can have more at their disposal to make, you know, make better decisions, to make decisions that some people find hard to make. And financial literacy, we know, is valuable information. So having you here this morning is continuing that discussion for our listeners. But let's familiarize our listeners with you a bit and exactly who you are and some of the things that you've been involved in. Tell us a bit about yourself, and you could go as far back as you like, to explain exactly who you are and how you became involved in financials.
Okay. First of all, thank you for having me on your show. I mean, I'm not going to ramble too much. I kind of going to try to keep it short and sweet with regards to my background, because I think that it's important for us to focus around, you know, finance. But just to give the listeners an idea, I'm actually Vincentian. So I'm from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Mm-hmm. I've been living in Trinidad for about 11 years. And, you know, I would have moved here actually to join RBC. So I would have joined in a management training program and kind of just learned my way around banking, especially in RBC. For 2 years, where I would have done rotations around different parts of the company. I would have then progressed into becoming a branch manager, where I managed Westmall as well as Shagorama's branches for RBC. I then moved to Antigua for a couple of years, where I would have been the country head, and came back. And then kind of joined the Answer group. So I worked actually for a few years for Answer Merchant Bank as the head of business development. And now I've taken up the role as head of retail and commercial banking for Answer Bank. Mm, so okay. Yeah, that's the kind of in a nutshell, really.
Okay.
You know, I have background in marketing as well, but that's about it.
Okay, that's great. Great information for our listeners to have an idea of the position of authority with which you speak to us. Just before we get into the nitty-gritty, Answer Bank opened a branch at Gulf City Mall, I think it was, recently?
Last Wednesday.
Okay, tell us
So it's actually... go ahead.
Yeah, tell us a bit about that. That was quite a development.
Yeah, we're actually very excited about what we're doing, because last Wednesday, we would have had the official launch. So we had a soft launch a few weeks before that, but we would have obviously invited the minister. I don't know if people would have seen it in the public. Obviously, our shareholders, you know, specially invited guests, where we really launched one of our first digitally enabled branches. So it's very different to what you see. Answer Bank, by the way, is not going to be a traditional bank in its truest form. We're kind of a hybrid. That's the plan, where we would obviously have digitally enabled branches. If you know you are in the South, we'll be happy for you to take a walk in and kind of just venture in a location, fiddle with our, you know, touch screens as well as our, you know, displays. Because what it is really we're going to focus around kind of giving customers a bit of both. So you can still walk in and do your transactions. However, it's really about the online banking features that we're trying to promote. And it's not like what you see in the market. You know, we have a lot of great things in store. And coming up next month, we're going to be launching the online banking platform as well as our mobile banking app. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And I think that, you know, people are going to really... you know, I'm not just talking about a branch. It's actually about financial wealth and health. So it's kind of, you know, perfect for me coming on this morning, because that is really what our focus is about at Answer Bank.
This is. I don't know if using the term cutting edge would be applicable in this situation, but you're talking about digitally enabled banking. Is this futuristic? Is this modern? Is this across the times? Is it the first of our kind in the country, the region? What can people expect? Because hearing digitally enabled, many people may not understand, all right, so what does that mean? I have to go online to do banking, the facilities at the bank, how are they different?
So, that's a great question. So What it is really a bit of, quite a few things. So in December, we'd have launched our state-of-the-art contact center. You know, some one of the pain points for customers that we found, although we are coming kind of almost last to market, what has done is really given us a chance to listen to our customers and listen to the customers who do banking in Trinidad and Tobago and really, you know, find ways for us to offer solutions. So one of those things that, you know, is very frustrating sometimes to get onto a bank. We've gone so digital that you don't hear that human touch. So we opened that contact center so you can, you know, constantly get on to employees, to the fellow members of staff to give you advice, to assist. That's one part of, you know, the digital presence, because in that contact center, it actually enables you, they'll walk you through whatever issues you may have. You know, if you're having trouble signing up for online banking, if you're having trouble, you know, just getting loan balances, they can actually put you onto one of our sales agents if you're actually interested in purchasing a vehicle, if you're taking out a loan, et cetera. So, you know, that is one way that we're affecting things. The other way is, you know, from a online presence, while it's not necessarily the newest feature in the market, what it is that we are actually looking at ways that we can offer services both. So from a traditional sense, you can go in and you can actually open accounts in our branches. But what we really bring to the table is online banking and opening the account from your mobile phone. So one of the key features of our online banking and mobile banking app is biometrics. So let me go into that a little bit. You may have seen it online, you know, overseas in other banks, with people who have had experience in other accounts opening and processes in the States or even in the UK. But you can actually upload your documents if you have them scanned, and you can open an account by simply engaging through our online banking app. That's, so you don't even have to step foot in a branch.
That's revolutionary. I've been looking at so, and you monitor social media a lot because, you know, that's where people vent and people raise issues and that kind of thing. And recently I've been seeing people complaining of how difficult the process is to open a bank account. What you are outlining to me here is revolutionary, where you can, as you are saying, you scan your documents, you fill out the form, and you open your bank account. Has that ever happened in this country before?
I don't think it's quite end-to-end fully automated. And like I said, technology is not something that is new. You know, it's easily copied and you can manipulate it. But I think with us, what we're trying to do is really reduce pain points for customers. So in the truest form, what's going to happen is that it'll literally take you 10, you know, it shouldn't take you more than 15 minutes to open an account with us once we launch our online banking and mobile banking app. Because what happens is once you have scanned documents, which most people have now, you can literally take photos on your phone. So if you have your job letter, you have your payslip, you have, you know, proof of address, what'll happen is that you will be able to take these pictures, upload these documents and your ID. What happens in the background is that while you are filling out your application form, it's actually scanning your data. So while you are, you know, putting in your information, you actually are scanning with a photo. So when you take a selfie at the end, this is the biometric feature that I'm talking about. What it does, it actually validates the IDs and the information that you put. And to make it even easier for customers, it's now pulling the data from your ID. So once it's been verified, it actually helps you to fill out the form. So what happens is that it makes the process way easier, way more seamless, and it's running checks in the background. So this is on the way to the customer. So it's really groundbreaking. For Trinidad and Tobago, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, we are the first to market in the world on it, but this is obviously, you know, technology that's out there, and we're just trying to bring it to obviously the wider public in Trinidad and Tobago.
Oh, I can tell you this. Any effort at reducing the bureaucracy, for want of a different term, the red tape that people have to deal with when it comes to banking is welcome. And these facilities that allow you within the comfort of your home or wherever else, your office or whatever, to do these banking transactions, that's definitely a welcome step forward. Because you hear people complain, you go to a bank and they have 24 outlets for tellers and there are two tellers available and people have to wait a very long time. And I understand the move towards online banking and reducing the face-to-face interaction and all of those things. I really do. I myself, I make full use of the Dropbox because I hate to go line up, and those things work well for me. And there are people who have gravitated towards the many features that banks have tried to implement to make the process a simpler one, an easier one for the customer. And that's good information, and I if you had, as we're talking about, I'm going to wrap up this discussion about the bank, if you had to encourage people to come to that branch at Gulf City for one reason or any reason, what would it be?
So what I say, what I focus around for us as a bank is convenient relationship. And it's kind of, it's funny, it's one word, but it can be broken into two. So I think that Answer Bank, if you are in South Branch, and we will be opening a couple other locations very shortly. I mean, obviously, you know, the listeners can look out for them. Obviously, conveniently located, ironically, in the different areas of Trinidad. And I just want to say that you touched on that where you have 24 counters and there are only two tellers. You know, we kept this, again, looking at the pain points, we kept this in terms of we wanted to make sure that we had the relationships that are still there, because, you know, no one wants to just always speak to a telephone or even just, you know, almost like an automated feature. So we kept those two tellers in the branch, but they're kind of hidden away. So you can still go and do your transactions and, you know, you can explore the other great features and even go through the process. We have, you know, persons who are in the branch, we have digital CSRs, influencers who are going to show you how to use it. So it's about really, if I sum it up in those two words, it's about giving you the convenience with accessibility and technology at your fingertips, but also we are focused on building key relationships with you, which, you know, we want to harness and kind of push through on a regular basis. So we want to get that perfect balance between a traditional and a digitally enabled bank.
Yeah, it's great information. And we need to take a couple messages. But when we get back, we'll get into the discussion that we're supposed to be talking about, which is financial literacy. And there is a lot that we need to discuss: savings, budgeting, tracking your expenses, and how to reduce debt. And we'll, of course, if there are listeners who are intrigued by what they've heard thus far and like to be a part of the discussion, we'll allow you to join us on 627-3223 and 625-2257. Speaking financial literacy, we'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. It's about 17 minutes before 8. Discussing financial literacy, our special guest, Head of Retail and Commercial Banking, Answer Bank, Edmund Josham. And some of the things that we need to discuss at this point in time, when it comes to financial literacy, maybe we've discussed it before on the program, but for those people who may have missed those programs and such, how would you describe financial literacy? What is financial literacy for the persons who have no clue whatsoever?
So to keep it simple, I would say that financial literacy is really just kind of building your knowledge or having an understanding of how to really get the best out of your finances. So it's about managing your finances. So it's about you really learning how to budget, how to save, and how to get the best out of, you know, the money that you are making on a regular basis.
And what would some of that
for?
Yeah, you spoke about savings and budgeting. Let's start with savings.
Yes.
What are some of the things that people should know? It sounds pretty straightforward that you shouldn't spend all the money you make, you need to save some. But there are people who may find that very challenging. When you have persons who live paycheck to paycheck, and the paycheck can't stretch long enough to reach the next one, and they find themselves in problems, how do people even begin to consider this thing called savings?
So, you know, before I venture on that path of savings, I think firstly what it is that, you know, you touched on something about people living paycheck to paycheck. But I think what the main focus I think persons should look at is really around budgeting. Budgeting is really critical before you can even look at exploring your savings options. What you tend to find is that people don't create a budget. You know, over time, I remember my dad sitting down with me a day, and, you know, I had these great grandiose ideas of what I was going to do with my first paycheck and what I was going to spend it on. And he said, you know, it's funny that you are looking at what you want to buy, but have you thought about what are the different costs that are attributed to what you want to do? And, you know, have you decided to stick to it? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, you know, we get in this thing where we make the money, the first check, and we want to treat ourselves to everything. But we don't actually look at exactly what we have to spend on a monthly basis. And that is really where budgeting comes in. So for instance, if I go to the grocery and I know that on average, I actually, you know, need to spend around $500 on groceries. You know, if I know I have to pay my phone bill, that might be about $100 to $200, whether it's, you know, prepaid or postpaid. You know, I have electricity to pay for, which comes every 2 months. I think that's the way TN Tech works here. And, you know, but you can split out a monthly cost. You know, it's really about looking at exactly what you need to spend on a regular basis and sticking to it. That also includes the savings part, because we should really be looking to save. And if the rule of thumb for most persons that they should really be trying to save 10% to 20% of their salary. Even if it's $50, it's $100, it doesn't matter, but whatever is 10% of your salary at a minimum should be what you look to save. So I think that budgeting and savings go hand in hand, and it's very important.
Yeah.
Right?
I understand. And in some of our previous programs, we've dealt with the issue of budgeting. What should a budget... Okay, how does one go about creating a budget? What are some of the nuts and bolts, some of the things that you have to have in your budget, some of the things you need to look at? How do you begin to create a budget?
Right. So what I normally advise people when they're creating a budget is, firstly, if you don't have a spreadsheet, you can get a piece of paper. And what you need to do is you need to look at, firstly, what are your critical needs, or what do you have to make a contribution to on a regular basis? So if you are, like I said, if you have an electricity bill that you know you have to pay on a monthly basis, if you have to pay a phone bill, if you have to pay your rent, if you have to basically pay water, again, some of these are on 2 month cycles, but you can actually attribute a monthly cost to them. So for instance, if your water costs you $300 every 2 months, you know it's going to cost you $150 a month. So what you should really look at firstly in a budget is, what are all the outflows of your cash? What do you need to pay that you cannot miss? So those are your utilities and your expenses that you have to put out, right? That is obviously supposed to be minus from your total salary or whatever you're earning. So if you're earning $5,000 a month, then what you should do is you should then find out whatever your cost is for, whether it's rent, whether it's electricity, whether it's water, and you minus that from that. So that'll kind of give you where your spend is. And then the other part about it is being very serious about where you attribute expenses. So besides your utilities and your necessities, such as those things, you kind of have to make sure that you give yourself a budget for entertainment. You know, if it's that, you know, your form of entertainment is going to take the family out for dinner once a month. If it's that you're going to go to, Five Islands Water Theme Park because you have kids, you have to attribute a cost to those things. What we do sometimes, we do not look at what these costs are that we know we want to do, and we just eliminate them out of our budget. And then we keep spending, and you don't realize that, you know, why at the end of the month, why don't I have any savings, and why don't I have something to show for it? It's because you didn't be principled in exactly what had to come out of your salary on a monthly basis, which includes enjoyment, because you have to live life. So even if it's, you know, entertainment, make sure you account for it. Write everything down that you want to spend on a monthly basis and attribute a particular amount to that and stick to it. The key part for budgeting is making sure that you stick to it. Don't venture from it. You have to be very disciplined about it, because if you don't, it's going to come back to bite you.
I think the average individual would know where their expenses are. What those expenses per month would be, because most of those are fixed. With grocery prices, I mean, every time you go to the grocery, there's an increased cost. It seems that everything is going up. We have to cater for that as well. But people are finding it hard. And we've had the discussion on the show before, because people are saying everything is going up except their salaries. And in a situation where you have that dynamic, where people are saying that, well, my expenses are going up, but my income remains the same, I'm assuming that budgeting becomes even more important in a situation like that. Am I correct?
It does. The other part about it, what I will say, which leads into the other part, which is your savings discussion that you touched on, but it's really more about diversifying. So, you know, sometimes we sit down and we say, you know, I don't want to pay for health insurance, but making your money work for you and being smart about it. I don't want to pay for health insurance. I don't want to pay for life insurance, you know. However, a small amount per month that you budget for in paying that actually covers you in the long run. Mm-hmm. So what I say by this is that, you know, a lot of individuals say, look, there's no way that I want to take out a policy for critical illness for, let's just say a ballpark figure between $500,000 and $1 million. Now that works out, if you speak to most insurance agencies, And if you go to Tatil, they will tell you that that will come up to maybe about between $400 and $800, depends on the value that you're attributing to your critical illness plan, similar to your life insurance. But we don't want to, sometimes individuals don't want to put that out on a monthly basis. But think about this. You don't want to pay $400 per month or $500 per month. But if you go to the dentist, it's going to cost you $500 to clean your teeth. You know, it can go, if there's something that there's a complication, you know, if you're, one of your kids gets sick, if you get sick, you know, a bill just to walk into emergency room is $500, right? So sometimes we look at these things where we are trying to, you know, limit ourselves on what we put out on a monthly basis because we just see cash going out of our accounts. But these things are really, you know, built for you to get the best out of it because you can claim this back through your insurance agents. So if you go to the doctor, if you go to do eye tests, if you just, you know, you had an incident where you go to the emergency room, once you keep the receipts, you can go back to your insurance agent. Now, you might not get 100% back, but the point is that it's way cheaper to pay $500 per month than a bill for $10,000.
Yeah. I actually...
You know, and I think we forget that sometimes.
I understand fully what you're talking about. And strange enough, getting people to appreciate that is difficult. I was actually involved in the insurance industry several years ago, so I know firsthand the benefits. And what I found back then with my foray into insurance is that the people who need it the most are often the ones who are most reluctant to get involved. Yeah. For the very same reasons that they see this money as something that they can allocate somewhere else that may bring them better results or more tangible results other than putting it aside for something that they may or may never have to use. But I've seen one illness can wipe out not just your life savings and put you in debt, but can wipe out the savings of your family members too. Because when you get sick, one if your family is as connected, sometimes when you get sick, the whole family has to chip in one way or the other to help you. And it can be very devastating. But sometimes as humans, we plan as if we're going to live forever, and well, sickness and health is for everyone. So I fully understand what you're talking about and how important these preemptive things are and how cost-effective they can be. And there's some other things that we need to speak to about savings because...
annuities, right? Your insurance. So annuities are, it's kind of like a pension plan that's separate and distinct from whatever company you work for. Like those are, that is also, if you don't have the discipline to save, I always recommend annuities. So if we talk, we go back to the rule of the thumb, which is 10 to 20% of your salary. If you know that you're going to touch your savings, then you can actually filter this into an annuity, which is kind of a locked in fund for people, you know, listeners who may not be aware of it. It's kind of like a pension fund, so it kind of becomes ready at your retirement age, where it's between 60, 65, and you make contributions on a monthly basis. And what happens is there are management fees that come out of it. But in the end, it helps you to save and it accumulates and they make it, it earns money for you. Now, the thing about savings and what you're talking about, where you spoke about, if you go to the supermarket on a regular basis, you see the prices change and the only thing that's not going up is your salary. So these are the ways that you go about really making your money work for you. And that's another important point, right? So if you would have noticed, I would have touched on diversifying, which is, you know, the D in debt, because I kind of have these four things where I try to, how do I counteract debt? And I use debt as an acronym and I speak about that. So it's like D for debt, for diversifying your debt. E is for really educating and earning, which is what I'm talking about now. And I think that, you know, the annuity, what people don't understand is you can file for your taxes at the end of the year. So when you make contributions to your annuity on a monthly basis, you can claim that back on your TD1.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a cash back from the government because they are really tax benefits on an annuity plan.
Yeah.
So that's another way that you make your money work for you. You've heard of generational wealth. People don't realize there's a thing called generational debt, which is linked to...
Yeah, you're right.
Right? It is. And it is linked to the same sickness. The sickness that you're talking about, and it's linked to this, right? Like where you don't realize that you are really doing yourself an injustice and your family members and, you know, your kids and whoever's coming after you in your family, because you are tying yourself into that. We have this bad habit of, we, you know, again, it goes back to that inflation is a real thing, which is what you're talking about with the grocery and your salary, etc. So you have to find ways to earn and let your money work for you, which is annuities, health plans, Because that covers your family as well. It's minimal. And just the everyday expenses like those, like I said, if you go to a doctor visit, you know, kids go to school, obviously we would have had the COVID pandemic. There's so much little things that come up. And if you really took your time and look at what you would have spent maybe medically on bills, the 500 or 400 per month is going to be way cheaper on a yearly basis or annual basis versus if you had to pay a medical bill
Yeah.
in one shot, as you mentioned. So it's about really making your money work for you.
I understand, as I said, you know, I'm involved in a personal charity drive that I do based on the show and that kind of thing. And I've seen firsthand where there are individuals, families who, if they had the guidance, myself also, when I look at my personal situation, if you make some different decisions, you can find yourself in a much better position later on in life. And I'm actually considering going back there, because I see the benefit of guiding people who need that kind of guidance. But we're heading up to the news, and we need to take a couple messages. But when we get back, I want to delve a bit deeper into this thing you call DET and the various acronyms that you've used, DEBT, and how you deal with them, and so on. We'll do that just after the 8 o'clock news, as well as try to find out how people can reduce their debt and use that money in reducing their debt for more positive things. That and so much more after the 8 o'clock news, right here on Freedom 106.5 FM. A couple messages to take us up to the top, and then, of course, we continue with our discussion. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
4 minutes after 8 into our final hour here this morning. We continue our discussion on financial literacy. With us, Head of Retail and Commercial Banking at Ansa Bank, that's Edmund Joshim. And of course, you can join the conversation if you'd like to on 627-3223, 625-2257, or via our WhatsApp messages. Before we went to the break, I was asking about this thing called debt and how to reduce your debt. You were speaking about how you analyze debt, what debt means and what it can mean, and how people should approach it. Tell us a bit about that.
So firstly, what I would say is there's good debt and bad debt. You know, I know you mentioned something, Satish, about, you know, there are individuals who are living paycheck to paycheck, and that's so true. It's really about trying to understand. I'm really happy that you have this topic, because I think that, you know, I do spend a lot of time, especially with, you know, kind of the younger generation, just trying to educate. I have a lot of friends who are in different fields who are not necessarily great at managing their finances. They're also not great at even understanding how to go about it and how to let the system work for you. You know, because I do understand that we definitely have a very tough time with inflation. You know, salaries are not going up. It's difficult for us to really see, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. So there's a few tips that I want to talk about with regards to debt. You know, we have this thing called the credit card. And the thing about the credit card is that while it's a great instrument, I think sometimes we don't, you know, we as individuals, we need to understand how to manage our debt. You know, whether we like it or not, it doesn't matter what position you're in. We all at some point in time have taken out a loan, right? We've at some point in time maybe had a credit card, you know, anything to help us to get over the line, or even to get through our monthly expenses at times, to take a trip, whatever it is. Now, the thing about it is that sometimes we are guilty of taking debt to pay off debt. That's one part, the first thing that I would say that's a no. We have to be very, you know, understanding to the fact that, you know, we pay interest on loans. And honestly, the interest that you're getting in accounts right now, bar Ansa Bank, because we actually have, you know, accounts that are giving you great operational accounts that are giving you great interest rates, by the way. Sorry for the plug. But interest rates are a real thing. And the thing is that if you take a loan to pay off a loan, all you're doing is just recycling debt. And what you're doing is you're actually harnessing more debt to pay, to clear off debt. And that's not really the best thing to do. So firstly, I would say that it's about really educating yourself around it. If you have a loan or a couple loans, what I would say is the first thing you should do is try to reduce the debt with the highest interest. So for instance, if you have a loan for a car, which sits at maybe in the market right now between 4% and 5% on interest, and you have an unsecured facility, like an unsecured loan, for maybe even just, which is a small amount, which is 20,000 or 30,000, you know, you really, although people might look to say, I want to pay off the car first, what you should really do is try to pay off the unsecured facility first, because more than likely that unsecured facility is probably at an interest rate of maybe 12 to 13%. And the car is around maybe 4 to 5%. So really what I would say is you want to focus around reducing the higher interest rate debts. The other thing that I will say is that if you have a credit card, for instance, what you should be doing is trying to pay off your debt in full, because the interest rates on credit cards are a lot higher versus if you were to obviously have a loan. And on top of that as well, what you need to do is you really need to look at how do you, debt is inevitable, right? So which debt is good debt and which debt is bad debt? Now, obviously, if you're going to try to better yourself and go to school, what you want to do is that, you know, there's student loans, there's small facilities that are being done for education purposes. You know, that is what I would refer to as good debt. Because what you do is that you're really trying to, you know, a home as well, because you're buying an asset, but that's not necessarily a depreciating asset like a car. So it's really around focusing how you really look at good debt and bad debt, and how do you make sure that you are not putting yourself in a position, given the fact that there's so much going on and there's so much more expenses that are coming on your table on a day-to-day basis, where you capitalize on those things and really focus around keeping your debt to a minimum, right? That is very important.
In the discussions that we've had prior, we've had people giving the advice. But in the back of my mind, I hear persons, maybe because of the charity drive, I've come in contact with them, people saying, well, I don't think I could get it done. And it sounds real nice for somebody to tell me, well, do this and do that and do the next, but I don't know where to start. And I don't think that with the little bit of money that I have, what you're telling me to do is even possible. I've actually heard people say those things. And that's a reality that some people are confronted with. They seem to be swimming against the tide. And their perspective is one that suggests to them that I just can't make it. I just can't do it. Saving is not something that I could even consider when my money done before I even get it. That's the perspective that some people have. It's a reality that some people are confronted with, which they think they can't get out of. The person's in that kind of situation, and we have many of them. Prior to COVID-19, you had persons who were losing their jobs. COVID-19 came and kicked a lot of people while they were down. People are now trying to get their act back together. You have small businesses as well who may be listening in, and they would have found themselves as small business owners, big business owners as well, found themselves in debt and need to find a way to get out of these things, not just the personal experiences, the home experiences. Well, what would you say to people who seem to be fighting an endless battle?
Well, I think first of all, you need to own it, and you need to, you know, you need to accept that sometimes it's bigger than you. And, you know, you need to have a conversation with your bank. I need to have a conversation with your account manager and your relationships. You know, I always tell people, I said, come to me. You know, I understand the circumstance. You know, everyone is going through different things. My story and what I'm going through is very different to what you are. And first, it's about a conversation. So you acknowledge it and you bring it to the bank and say, look, I mean, I've had instances where persons have come in and said, look, you know, I cannot pay. I just cannot make this payment. I know it's the bank's duty as individuals for us to kind of go through and have discussions with our clients to do what's best for them. And part of that is you bringing that to us, because unless we know, it's not going to, you know, we're not mind readers and we're not going to figure it out. So what you do is you come in and you have a conversation. And really what we do is we try to be creative and we say, look, what can you, so you tell me, what can you possibly pay, whether it's a weekly, a monthly, because sometimes the debt seems so much and you feel like you're drowning.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you need to have the conversation. So what will happen is that us as bankers or even the relationship managers, we know what your salary is, we know what your expenses look like, and that's why it goes back to this tracking your expenses. So when you list out everything that you have to do and you say, okay, have a conversation with us, and really it's our duty to try to find a way to help you from drowning. So you know, in instances where persons would have lost their job and you are paying an installment that is maybe might be $2,000 out of that salary, that really is only six. I mean, it might seem like I'm putting you in further debt, but what I'm going to do is try to restructure this loan to really help you to get a little bit of breathing room so you can, you know, manage yourself through this time until you maybe find a new job, until, you know, because sometimes what I found was a lot of people might, maybe not losing their job, but what they did was that it would have reduced, maybe their salaries would have been reduced, or, you know, they've been paying, where they would have been paid on a regular basis, on a monthly, because the commission would have decreased significantly. So that's changed your position. So you have to go into the bank and you have to say, look, what is it that you can do to help me here? And it's the bank's duty to try to see, because the thing is, you have to remember, banks don't want delinquency. We don't want people to default to their loans. You know, even if we have an asset or something to hold, it's going to cost us to try to sell it. It's very inconvenient because the bank is not in the business of selling, right? We do loans. So really it's about coming in and trying to, the aim here is to try to restructure, maybe refinance the deal. So, you know, for instance, if you, like I said, if you have that $2,000 that you were paying and your loan may have been $30,000 because you did some home renovations and your job would have been affected, come back in and we can maybe refinance it and we reduce the payments down to maybe $1,000 that you can afford. So that little $1,000 difference may have affected or changed how you go about your, you know, your everyday routines, and it gives you a little bit of breathing room, right? The other thing is, try to, obviously, you know, where you can't see your way, it's about really trying to figure out tracking your expenses and saying, look, some of these things, I'm going to have to be realistic about it and know that I maybe need to take out a loan to kind of consolidate debt. Because what I found is that a lot of persons tend to have, you know, I'll have something at the credit union, I'll have something at, you know, that Answer Bank, and then have something maybe at RBC. And what I have is three different facilities that when I add it up, it comes up to maybe like $4,000 or $5,000 a month, right? And that's insane because you are stretching yourself. So sometimes what you need to do is go into, like I said, go into the institution, see what's the best you can do. And maybe what we do is we consolidate that debt. So, you know, where it would have been $20,000, $5,000 in different zones for four different facilities, including credit card, what we do is we take a $20,000 and we consolidate into one debt, and your payments may have come down from being $2,000-$3,000 to maybe $700-$1,000. That is how you really try to manage. So when you can't see your way, that is the best advice that I could give, because there's no way else for you to manage that debt. You know, it has to really, you kind of have to go back to the bank and hopefully we can find a way to help you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, that kind of debt consolidation advice is valuable, because I know people who are at their wit's end. They just don't know how to, and there are some people who say that the banking system, or at least the system that they're involved in, have lost that human element, that sense of compassion, and it just seems as though there are no avenues available. It's one way or no way. What you're suggesting to us this morning is reintroducing that kind of compassion to the consumer. That is valuable at some point in time, because what you have is you have persons who, let's just say they took out a car loan, may have been a good customer for 6 years and something, and in the final year would find themselves in problems and would be at their wit's end, because sometimes it's embarrassing that you've found yourself in a situation where you can't pay your debts and you don't know what you're going to do. You stand losing your car. All of those things, I understand them fully. I do. And if this is a facility that's available, I'm sure that many people will want to at least explore the options, because there are people in this country who can't seem in their minds to keep their head above water. We're almost out of time for our interview. It's amazing how quickly the time flew by this morning. But let's, as I do with most of my interviews, bits of advice. Because you can never tell who's listening to this program and what situation they are confronted with at this point in time. We're talking about financial literacy. We're talking about trying to manage your money so that you get the best out of it, the most out of what you have, and that you don't find yourself in the financial pitfalls that so many of us do. If I were to say to you, well, give my listeners some advice as to some of the things they should be focused on in trying to stabilize their finances, what would that advice be?
So, like I said, I would have touched on it when we spoke earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to kind of just give relatable things that I think that, because that tends to stick in people's minds. So like I said, if you think about debt, I can give you four things that you constantly try to do that will should help you to break down debt. But I want to touch on one thing before that, Satish. You mentioned about the car. Now, that is a perfect example. I might have paid a car loan for 6 years. The car is held by the bank anyway, because when you take a loan out, all it's in your name, we hold the bank as security. We hold the car as security. So for instance, in that last year, if you're struggling to meet the payments, we have the collateral already. So if it's that you want to add something, maybe you want to refinance the facility, or you want to take a small one to match that way we consolidate debt, we are holding that, right? So we can cover that, and we can actually give you a little extra cash to maybe if you had something at another institution. Because what I find is people spread out, like people get caught up in just going to different facilities because, you know, I can't qualify for here. I can't qualify for here. My debt's bad now because people, you know, may have not paid something or have some delinquency on their files, so they can't be approved for another facility. The bank that you're with, you know, can help you out. So go to them and have a conversation and say, look, you know, I have this car loan. I'm struggling right now. How can I really, I have a couple of loans. Say I have a credit card. How do I pay it off? So even if you have an outstanding balance in your credit card, you're paying a lot of interest on that card. So maybe you take a small loan with that to pay off those things. And like, again, goes back to debt consolidation, and that'll help, right? So that is a big thing. To touch on what you're saying, for me to takeaways for the listeners, and I understand. So I spell out debt, and these are the things that I do. So for D, what I would say is diversifying and debt consolidation, which is, so you diversify what you do with your money. Like, so if you do, you invest in a annuity, if you know, you try to get different streams of income, you know, even if it's just, COVID saw people become very entrepreneurial in terms of how they approach things. You know, they would have become drivers of food drop and things like that. So try to find ways to diversify your income. That'll help you to offset some of your debt. Any debt consolidations like what we spoke about recently in the past conversation. E is for, you know, education, which is, you know, constantly try to educate yourself and earn as you go along, such as the annuities where you can write back tax and you get cash back in hand from the government. You know, if you've managed to get some savings, you know, try to put it in maybe, you know, an account that's getting a bit more interest for you. You know, if you want to put it by, you know, health insurance and things like that, that you, you know, overall will kind of just nullify medical expenses if something does happen to you, God forbid. B is for budget. So constantly budget and stick to it. Put down what you want to spend in a month, whatever it is that you have to spend, and the other, you know, costing that you have that you may need to do on a regular basis, and stick to it, right? And T is for track your expenses. So no matter what, if you go through to the grocery, if you go out, if you are, you know, you just pick up a few things for the house, if you have to buy some light bulbs, whatever it is, it's never too small. Always track your expenses so you can see how much you're spending on a monthly basis. And then you compare that to your budget and see if you're staying within your budget. Because, you know, we might do budgeting and we might see what we're spending on a monthly basis. But if we don't look at both of them combined, then we're not going to be able to really see that we have matching what we set out to do. So those are kind of the four areas that represent, you know, debt as an acronym for us to counteract that. Those are the four areas that I think really stand out to me in terms of that.
And I think that's great advice for us to end our interview here this morning. Thank you so much for being with us and for imparting the wisdom and the insight into some of what the daily challenges might be for some of our listeners, some of our citizens. I do hope that after listening into the information, people try to practice some of what, you know, has been imparted on them this morning, and definitely visit that new branch out at Gulf City. Sounds amazing. Once again, thank you for being with us here this morning on our program.
Satish, appreciate it. Thanks to the listeners.
And that's where we drop the curtains on this very special interview. Financial literacy, ladies and gentlemen, we all need the advice, myself included, as to how you try to make the best of what confronts you.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.